Something.
How do they even think that you have to be the one in charge? Because I don't want to ever be.
I don't know, because I didn't want to be.
You're the senior member of us.
I am the senior member, period.
Literally a figure to me, huh?
I shouldn't be here. I should be retired.
No.
I'm going for 9 years.
I know. That's okay.
Oh, there we go. There's a corner.
Yep, we made it.
Oh, yep.
We made it.
Is Josh on?
No, you're right here. There's only us four, I guess.
Okay, we have four.
Yay.
I'm tired of not being able to.
I'm going to go do my next one.
How's May?
May's good. It's fine.
I think I'm good.
Yeah, I'm just like, it's running around all the time, and I don't know how sometimes I
make it.
But you know what? We're here.
Yeah. I never see you, and yet you live right behind me.
I know. Every once in a while, I walk down the block. I see evidence.
People are there.
Yeah. You probably get a kid screen sometimes. Yeah? I'm not usually out there. We have good staff.
Some of the others
do what needs to be done.
How are you?
Good, you?
Yeah, I know.
See Kelly there.
Huh?
Kelly
McAlee.
Yeah. I don't see him there.
Well, this is probably his, I'm sure. He still wants to put those stories. No.
Sure.
Who is?
Find out.
Yeah.
You and Kate's a lot of fun. Do you read them there?
Yeah.
What'd you think about?
I read them twice, but I'm like, wait, I gotta reread this. And I'm still a little like.
Did I get your number already? I got one.
I think you did. Because, well, I
would be nice
to talk to Diggs. He said, because I missed the cruises.
It's fine. I was good.
Wait, no, I don't.
Oh.
What is yours?
What's your problem?
We're there. Yes, we are. We're
there.
We're here. Okay, we'd like to welcome everybody to Planning and Zoning tonight. Sorry, we're shy in numbers, but we do have a quorum. We have May, Anderson, Roxy, and myself, and Ray. We'll start off with our public hearing. Okay, is there anybody here for the development of the Pioneer Lane development? It's 205 West, 800 South.
Jason Curtis is on the Zoom for the list. This is the project we
didn't we approve this?
We kind of got out of order. We approved the project for the development agreement, so technically we're supposed to post a public hearing to approve the development agreement. We've already approved the project.
So now we have a development agreement in front of us.
Yes. So this is just a public comment on the recommended approval of the agreement. But it's the same project. There's nothing changing on it. It's just this is the we got a little bit out of order. Now we're supposed to be this way a little order. Okay. This way at least fulfilling the legal requirements.
Is anybody here representing that or against it or have any comment?
Yeah, Tyson representing.
Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. I have an acre with the normal, but I am here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, since we have nobody.
So just, so for clarification then, this agreement that we have in front of us basically represents everything we talked about last month, put into paper that they have met the agreements, obligations, regulations of the ordinances.
Yes. Yeah, it's basically, attorney called this is horse trading, where we don't allow townhomes in our zoning currently. This is allowing them to have that zero setback between the lots of townhome having to share it all, because otherwise they have that 8-foot setback on the sides. So this allows them to do that, and in exchange for that, they've added the amenity of the playground and the additional gravel parking. So we're kind of, it's kind of a give and take. So.
Okay.
All right, we'll move on then. All right, the next A2B is Daniel Kennedy. You see here? Come on up to this table and tell us what you plan to do there with your development. Got the address wrong here on my...
Yeah.
You had 600 North instead of 600 South.
Oh, you're right.
Is that going to make a difference?
No.
Okay.
It's fine. I don't know.
Unless somebody's really mad about it. Well, I tried to figure this development at 600 North, and I'm glad it's south and not north, so it would not work.
Did you want to pull that up so you can see it?
So this was the development that was proposed a year or so?
Yes. Yeah.
Actually, longer now.
Well, I remember it because Jared, you know, he was the one that proposed it.
Yes, and so it was. It went through a certain point, and he just hasn't done much with it. And so I approached him, and so I'm picking up the baton and basically taking it where he left off.
Okay. All right, is there anybody from the public that has anything to say about it? Go ahead and tell us what you want to do there.
You bet. So, I guess the same thing is we'll put campground there, RV parking, and the two adjustments we did do from Jared is Jared was proposing a bridge going over the canal to the other property more. So we eliminated that. And then I also put another road down at the south end of the property. She was proposing just one road in the circle. I'm having two roads in on the frontage. So that's really the only change from last time. But so it would be RV parking and storage.
Okay, this is just for the public hearing part, and then we make a motion and ask the questions, right?
Yes.
Okay. Has anybody got any comments on this?
So, I do. Because I tried to read through this and understand it. Something to do with, is this part of the horse trading, David? In that the city is going to waive the city requirement of curb and gutter,
yes.
But require sidewalk. What about asphalt road, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and part of the reason for that is we are currently in the process of rebuilding the bridge on 100 East. Or, yeah, 100 East and the South, right? That we're going to be replacing
the Dalton
Bridge.
What Dalton Bridge?
Richmond City's plan is to develop this road fully, but at this point we don't have all the right-of-way that we need to do that, so we're not exactly sure where the right-of-way line is going to be. So. This will give us a few years to get that road developed. And then once we have that on the plan, we'll be able to say, okay, this is where we want the sidewalk for the power on here. So that's I think part of why they.
Okay.
And this is an agreement they actually drafted from Jared. He was the process that it hasn't been approved.
So what about lighting? At the facility, at the campground itself.
Yeah, so on the plan, we are planning on lighting, so we'll have a light at both on our property, but illuminating the entrance and exit are both entrances. And then we'll also have lighting throughout the park as well. It'll be a low-level lighting. Send those plans to the gas.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't get those.
No,
there is some stretch of lighting.
Okay, so this part is just a public hearing, right? Okay.
So am I asking a question?
Kind of.
Well, I'm a public.
Okay, all right, two, okay, we'll get back to just a second here. All right, 2C, public hearing on amendment two, that's section 1714-317-30-20. The Richfield City Code to define where accessory storage, which is portable storage containers, are allowed within the city. Is there anybody here about the storage containers? Okay. We'll move on to our administrative actions. Okay. Item 3A. We need to discuss approval of the development agreement for Pioneer Lane Development. Okay. You guys got any questions concerning that? We've got over, what, two, three months?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we recommend approval of development of the development agreement for Pioneer Lane Development.
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded. Ray seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Daniel, now. Okay, questions on this? Now, I'm concerned about the road, David. Okay. That's 100 East, right?
Yes.
So, city owns the property on the east, right?
City owns
from right there,
right here.
Yep. And Don that's Monk, that's Don Monk's. That's
and he owned all that property.
Yeah,
too,
he does. Okay. Ooh, sorry.
He owns, kind of like right here.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, he owns this.
Yeah, he owns all
of this. Oh, yeah.
What's your concern about?
Okay, so is the road going to be paved then?
Yes, when we develop it.
Eventually, but not now.
Okay.
Okay. It's part of the development agreement. Later on, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, 5 year.
Yeah, there's a 5 year sunset on this.
Okay.
And so I would be committing to putting in, at least on our current plans, it would be sidewalk, curb, gutter, and asphalt in the entrance there. So that would be so much more in asphalt. But part of that development agreement you see there is depending on what happens or where this road goes up here. So my secondary entrance is right here. So what we were proposing is I would take care of all of it from here up to this point, but just with the curvature of here, you know, in the future that road may need to adjust over here to have access over there. So I'm requesting I don't do development along here.
Not until something actually happens on that property.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the rest of it though would be a 5 year commitment, and if something happens or if there's a delay and you guys want to extend that, we can do that at that point. But if you say, yeah, let's go ahead and get that done, then I'll get that done.
Hey, is there a concern about the canal with a part, you know,
canal
safety issue?
Canals on the west, northwest side, yeah. Right through there.
I mean, if you want. There's a five-foot.
Yeah, there's a fence, but there's also a 5-foot concrete.
Okay.
Yeah, on that side.
It's a pretty high wall.
Okay, the access to the existing trailer park comes in from the
ERA?
The ERA, is that right?
Yeah, well.
Isn't there a bridge across there? Yeah, right there. Okay.
Not a bridge, though.
And I noticed that there is a sewer manhole there on the, in between the two properties, right where, right there. That sewer access, is that right?
Jared, I believe, dropped that.
Yeah.
I noticed there was an access there, I mean, a manhole there, so there's his sewer.
Yeah.
And the light.
How many, like, spaces do you anticipate?
Four.
Permanent, any, guess it does, if somebody wants to be there long-term?
I guess technically, it would be short-term, meaning that the, my understanding of the code is this, it's set up for short-term. But there is some long-term, you know, allowed, but maybe, you know, probably continue to come up with really nice, but there's, it's really not written, it's short-term.
My code asks.
30 days? Any other questions?
When is this road that's being built gonna go through and what's its own date?
It just depends on how much money.
So like ideally, we would have that sooner than later, but we don't have the funding.
Yeah, I mean, the first step, is moving forward, which that's kind of key. Key sort of structure that will allow the rest. It sounds like we're moving forward on the bridge. It's kind of a discussion between today about it. It sounds like we're so speaking on that really quick. So it just kind of depends on.
And does this?
Is there grant money? Is there road money available for it? And so it might be a year, it might be 4 years.
Right.
So the city really is directly involved because they own the property on the east, right?
Yes. Yes, they own.
So where will the road eventually end up going? Do you know?
It will just follow the same path that already does, that the road follows.
Like north, I mean mostly north. Where will it go to north?
Goes right into First East.
Just right on the same place.
Yeah, it'll follow with the historical road that roughly should be along here, possibly. So, I mean, back when
the, okay, should,
back when we still had a bridge, and this was, I mean, this was how I used to put a whole bunch of people like this.
Now, that's right where it is.
Yeah, well, this, I think this is actually Don's bridge. I think our bridge is actually
going to
be like that.
Oh, is it? Okay. Oh,
okay, that makes
that's sense. Right. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And what's this zone for?
This is commercial general. So it is. It's been
we'll have to have a site plan and everything, won't we? Have? Probably. Yeah.
This is just kind of the first
preliminary.
So you can move forward. So,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, I think I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just thinking about is it meeting the zoning? And if we're going to put a road there, I just was thinking about you know, what that could mean for each of us, but I don't really have any concerns. Other than, I think it's good real estate. I think it's a good spot for something, so.
Okay. My concerns is mostly that's a lot of money you put into something. It seems like the current ones aren't full now. But that's not my bid. That's your money.
To me, it's the
money
project.
Yeah.
And yes, it's a decent amount of money put into it, but at the same time, it also allows for flexibility. What's done with the property is flexible.
And the property right next to it is the same thing.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So all right, I'll entertain a motion if somebody wants to make one.
You need a motion?
Mm-hmm. We need a motion.
Okay. I'll make a motion of approval of the development agreement with Daniel Kennedy, Red Roof Development, at the campground at 600 South, 100 East in Ruthville.
On condition that we meet all the requirements there.
Well, this is just the development.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Okay. Next item would be is 3C, recommend approval of amendment sections. Let's see. 17.14.300 and 17.30.02. Table 31.2 of the Richfield City Code to define where net accessory storage, which are portable storage containers, are allowed within the city.
So this is just our ordinance that we're going to eliminate portable storage containers on the Main Street.
Yeah, downtown area, downtown zone, is that right?
Well, it's more because it actually goes beyond downtown. Already has it, so this will go beyond downtown. Anything that's okay. So this is what we've been discussing for two or three months. Okay.
Any questions?
One of the questions, only question I had was short term. Define that.
Okay, so short term would be something for.
Do we have it in code that says 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever short term is?
Yeah, like for like a construction project, we need new stuff in and out. Once their building is done,
they have to take it off. What about the fireworks containers?
Yeah, that.
Does this eliminate those? Does this complicate that? What does that do?
That'd be short term.
That'd be short term.
Well, they're only there 2 weeks or so.
They're only there a week, really. They only have a
small
window.
Yeah, they
leave them there until the 24th.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
I should shut up.
So we have a code that says short term is this amount of time. Okay, I'm good with that.
Okay. Any more discussion?
We've talked about it a lot.
We have. Yes, we have. Okay, I'll entertain a motion on that one.
I will make a motion that we recommend approval of amendments to section 17.14.300 and 17.30.20 of the Richfield City Code to define where accessory storage, portable storage containers are allowed within the city, being none allowed on any one that has Main Street frontage. Get it all in?
Okay. Got a motion, Roxanne, and second by May. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that passes. All right. Okay, item 3D. Gentlemen. The SEPCO Utah Counseling Center. So you're going to reconstruct the building or no?
Yeah, we're going to tear that one down and build something else on top of it.
Oh, really? Okay.
We do have an address correction on this as well.
You get that, Dave?
265 South.
This is the current building.
The old between the Maverick and the old five.
Yeah. Okay. And it has been used for counseling in the past.
Yeah, so we built our new one on one of these. Okay. We've been trying to sell this one, and it's going to work out, so this is the better plan.
So you're going to remove that building and build another? Yeah. Okay. You got the plan here.
Okay. When you say the seeking center, is it just intake, basically?
It's essentially an emergency room for the mentally ill. If people are being brought in from other places and they stay there for 3 hours, what happens to the new attendees up? It's a great question. Do they get kicked back on our streets? At intake, they are going to be, and let's ask, how are we going to be getting home? And that will be asked right when they come in at first. And then we will have staff that can drag them back if no one else is available.
And you remember, when we looked at this before, we looked at the statewide statistics, because they have to collect the discharge data. It was a couple of percent that the state was not known this time. So this is statewide. We're one of the last areas that we received from the state. So, but that unknown discharge, not knowing where they went, is one of the keepers statewide.
So how does it work? I'm just curious. So somebody's having a rough day, they need somewhere safe to go, they just go check themselves in, drive over, yeah. Parking. What's parking like here?
Plenty of parking,
yeah.
In the back. They will.
This one's
sorry. So I have this.
This is cool.
Okay.
Oh,
look at this.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So there'll be an intake worker there. There'll be nurses on staff. And if you're actually someone that's kind of been there and done that in the past. A therapist will be available 24/7. That can also respond to you. We'll assess the physical assistance they might be in the middle of a really bad day. They can drive themselves there. They will be assessed to see what's going on. And they'll ultimately get blood and come out of the regular emergency room in the hospital.
So this isn't something that, like, if officers are responding to something, they're not going to drop people off here? They can. Okay.
Is there an age restriction? Like, do you have to be adults, 18 and up?
Okay, our mobile crisis outreach team is typically falls between the first in line to be able to work with the officers.
Okay.
So they're going to be there working with the officers, and they will be doing stuff with their own.
And the assessment, it evaluates what kind of support they need?
What they might be going through.
Whether they are
suicidal, homicidal, whether it is a panic attack, there's voices, things along the road, and to assess where's the best place to do this.
I mean, it's been a level of care. So that assessment might be the patient hospitalization, Here, someone that's been checking those in or being off by law enforcement after 12 hours and things that aren't improving with your security and you need to know it, and you know, that could be better than the person for the house.
And that would be just moved to your facility.
No. That's a residential facility. Inpatient is a hospital.
Got it.
You know, they have a nice facility.
Okay.
You talk about it.
Do you just handle transport? Like if they're in here and like, wow, this person is getting worse, and to send them to the hospital, how do they get there?
It could be a number of different ways. Currently, law enforcement would be good if they are what's known as a pink sheet or a blue sheet. They require law enforcement to come in and transport them there because they are a danger to themselves or somebody else.
So there's no good about that.
Or if they want to go voluntarily and drag themselves to the hospital.
So. Did I hear you say that there will be a nurse on staff all the time for 24? Not all. Okay. I just noticed 11 patient rooms. That seems like a lot. Is it that much call for that, or is it just that you had enough space for that?
We're building, probably overbuilding, to be completely honest with you. But the need of mental health services is going up. So rather than having to come back and ask the world what in 6 years and say let's build this again. We had the same thing. I grew up asking almost the exact same question when we built a residential facility for the first time. There's okay beds. And the question is, we've got an awful lot of 4 or 5 years to go back saying we need 8 additional beds. So we'd rather feel big and be able to meet the capacity.
We don't want to grow into that, but you're ready if you need to.
I agree. Yeah. And what they've actually shown statistic-wise for those that have gone to the UCB Center, their health improves, they're able to stabilize and get back on the feet.
Just to speak to that, also with the 23-hour thing, there's overlap. You know, they're like a hotel room where you're in and then you're gone. That overlap kind of necessitates having a few extra, because there might be a 2 hour overlap between two different individuals. So
I was going to ask about peak times, like you have peak traffic.
It's usually what the numbers are showing right now. It is going to be about noon to about midnight. And it just depends, but things are not obviously going to calm down. Most of the numbers are coming from large urban areas. In the Four Corner area, Jesus Christ, they've seen more intense time in that part of the rural area, and that's going to be more kind of late afternoon, early evening.
Another question that's come up to me is: this is going to be at first more rooms than you probably need. Is there any sort of like flex space? Like, I'm just thinking, is there any other services that you guys will be offering, or is it just the check-in and check-out? I'm just wondering what kind of, are you going to be offering other offerings besides just being able to self-check-in?
All our other offerings happen on the same campus. We have a clinical room and the residential and the other facilities.
Okay.
So really the focus of this building will be the CDC.
Okay, so it's not
getting
sort of flex space
here.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. This is
asking.
There are other things offered, and they're just right next to one
another. We have a pathway between those two facilities.
I believe our plan, it's not up there, but when we built that, we have a nice fence there. We actually, the fence is safe, but I think for you, there are two exits onto Main Street right now. We have one right next to the Maverick and one right next to the old fire station. We're going to eliminate the one on the north end, which is the one near the old fire station, and just have one. And we will actually have a drive-through. Our new building isn't shown on there, but on that, right where it is cursor, it's basically, it goes straight out, and it has to dig a little bit to the north to get to 100 East, but I think fire department's going to like that a lot better for access either from the east or the west. But that fence that did divide, we are going to remove a portion of that, so that is an open there. And the entry to the building is actually from the east. So our preference is actually that the people enter either from 300 South or 100 East, sorry, I mean, let's do that again. Either because we have an entrance on both, and then they drive west.
Oh, you're going to drive around to the back of the building, more privacy that way.
Actually, yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
And it's a real good idea. I mean, there's the anonymity piece to it. It's a better solution.
Yeah.
We have emergency egress from the back around the south. The main street just for walking in emergency, but really, you know, the main flows would be wrong.
Is it a masonry fence or?
It's the Simtech fence.
Okay.
We have it around our building.
All right, all right.
We found bad luck with the regular vinyl. But,
yeah.
The Simtech has been
good.
It looks really good with that fake off wood.
Covered by insurance, I can go like get a Starbucks and then check myself in. And
it's actually because of the funding. Most insurance companies don't pay anything. Medicaid does.
Okay.
But it will be a free.
Sorry, that was bad. Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes, Starbucks.
Yeah, I mean,
we're not only a Starbucks.
No, it's a street. I mean, Starbucks. I don't even have a letter.
Does Starbucks self medication?
I mean, take some caffeine.
Really get it going.
No, I think this is great. I have a couple other questions, but just come up. It looks like. I mean, we're going to be ADA compliant, and you're going to have a sidewalk that makes around the building. How's that? Like, you have sidewalk on the street, but people are parking. You're going to have good walkability on the property, is my question.
Yeah, there should be.
In case you want to walk across.
There should be access from the front.
Okay.
All the way down the south of the building, all the way up the street.
Okay.
So you have ADA access all the way out the street. They're going to do some nice landscaping in the back of the building, which is the Main Street side, so it'll look pretty for Main Street, also provide privacy for those patient rooms.
Yeah.
Back wall.
Okay.
So these patient rooms, that's what faces Main Street.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Did Chief have any other questions?
That's a common question. In real time, what's coming in?
And there are some. Emergency protocols that will be established with the sheriff as well. There's no better where we're there as what our procedure is. But you know where is going to be coming in.
Is it like with the police, the relationship with the police with these other facilities, does it help them more or does it like add to their workload? What's that look like?
It actually decreases law enforcement's workload. Average drop-off time is 5 minutes. Whereas if they get an individual that's struggling, they might sit with them for a couple hours. Will they calm down, de-escalate, or they take them to the hospital and hang out the hospital for a while until their security comes in. We're actually decreasing their workload.
Hospital
would be
not
a
standard, whereas the drop-off period is just for the on-duty.
So David?
My family's actually experienced using one of these procedure centers at the Huntsman Center, and it was one of the most positive experiences we've ever had. We take my brother-in-law, he did really well, and he feel calm down. It's really, really good.
You can say it.
Thank you for that.
It's a need nowadays.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's kind of interesting that you shared with me. I don't remember if this was in this whole intake or entry to patients in the hospital. Sometimes the hospital
build a city for people to at least pick up. And we don't pay it, but it's just kind of interesting. I mean, I don't suspect you guys would be building a city.
We need more mental health resources, and especially if it can be framed as just like a, you know what, you're having a rough day, just
well, look like the building,
you know,
yeah,
and not
currently
like,
have
your right.
Same finish. Just an extension of what you already have. So David, is our role tonight approve the plan? Is it based upon them meeting all the stipulations, requirements, ordinances of the city?
Typically, that's how we've done the approval on the this came quick. One of the reasons we're building the same building we built in Vernal. Northeastern was put in a similar situation last year where the state came and said, here's your money for your receiving center, we need the building put up. They've done the same thing with us. They notified us early January that you guys need to get this built. There's funding that's going away if you do not use it. And that's why we're really trying to get moving. We're getting ahead. I think there might be some plans issued. You know, demolition should start Monday. We're supposed to start today. We couldn't get power and water turned off in time. But that's the push here, is to get this thing done in a timely manner so that the state is, you know, that they've given us. The money's there for us to use. We need to spend it now to get this building
done. Yeah, I need to build a city.
Does this older building have asbestos in it?
We did the testing for that, and it is not.
Okay, you're lucky there.
Yes, we thought. There's an old flat section with the gravel up underneath. That thing's been built at least, I think, four times. I've been involved in two of them. Dan was pretty certain that flat roof would have some, but we didn't. We got it all tested. They were very thorough. They made a mess of my building. Good thing it's getting torn down.
What's the security light?
So we'll have a car reader access.
Okay.
Our design is actually, there'll be a vestibule.
You can see this vestibule right here.
Oh.
They won't be allowed past the second door without being buzzed in. So they'll come in here. And then you've got a reception, and they'll be able to buzz in. Once they get buzzed in, they only have access to this intake. And then this entire area, it's locked down from the outside. Anybody in can leave whenever they want.
What happens if the patient, becomes harmful?
That's the protocol that they was talking about law enforcement.
Okay.
And if they're leaving, we do not
prevent them from leaving.
If they feel like they need to leave,
do you inform law enforcement then if they're leaving?
It depends on what the circumstances are. If they are irate, if they are...
Let somebody know they're
out. Somebody, yes, law enforcement will be informed.
Do you have anyone there that, you don't force them to stay or anything, but do you have anyone there in case of, somebody has...
Return violence?
Yeah. No, you just would call. How often does that happen in some of these other facilities?
It doesn't happen.
Okay.
It happens, but it doesn't happen very often.
Okay.
What we typically see is if someone is there with a bat, a gun, or a taser, it actually escalates.
Yeah.
In the middle of the global crisis, how they go out with law enforcement, law enforcement actually just steps away.
Yeah.
And they let the therapist.
She's better, de-escalator. Yeah.
De-escalate.
So then, you're going to have a nurse and you're going to have a therapist at all times, and when this starts getting more full, you'll staff accordingly, yes? Yeah.
There's staffing rules that we have to call for licensing. And I'll also speak to this, if we're going to let somebody know. We also have to walk that fine line as well.
Okay.
So we have to be able to...
Get the rules locked.
We have to follow those as well.
that's why I was advocating on that. It depends on the circumstances. If they are a danger to some others and they're walking away, that's when we would.
I think that what the community would be the most worried about.
Okay, any more questions? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve the reconstruction building on 255 South Main. We use it as a receiving center for the Central Utah Counseling Center, contingent upon meeting all the stipulations, requirements, ordinances with the city. Well, what wording did you use, David?
Technical review.
So passing the technical review.
Second.
Okay, got a motion by Ray and a second by Roxy. Okay.
You're not for me.
All right.
All
in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Yeah, it passes, so.
Need a good project.
Yeah, the darn thing down.
That'll make that area look so much better.
Thank you.
It's a need we need.
Very.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So very.
Recommendation on the main pad, make your triangle.
Everyone can see. You guys can take this main pad to this room right here.
Okay. Kelvin.
Now if I just put a new Maverick in next door.
New Maverick's going to have to be big.
Yeah.
All right, give us what you want to do.
It's Calvin Anderson.
Yes. So essentially, I own a home by the Lions Park for us.
Is that Sue's?
Yes.
Is she related to you?
No.
You just bought it from the family?
Yes, I never met Sue at all. I dealt with
one person.
Yeah.
Okay.
I never met Sue. I get a little still. She gets lots of mail. I don't know Sue.
Well, that's up my neighborhood. I know the house very well. I'm, okay.
You probably wouldn't recognize the inside anymore, but you know the house.
It's the second house from the.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right up there. So essentially, my wife and I live in the upstairs. And so the basement actually has its own entrance, its own kitchen. Living room, it's a pool.
Entrance in the back?
Yes, it is around the back. So as you see, there's the sidewalk goes up to the front door, but it's actually a sidewalk all the way around the back of the house. It goes around the back and has its own stairwell and entrance in there. And so what I'm looking to do is I'd like to do a short-term rental out of that basement, basically. So the Airbnb can get off the...
So in the basement, is there... tell us what's in the basement. What's down there?
Kitchen. Has a full kitchen, living room, not really, but the kitchen, living room, two bedrooms, and a bathroom. So two bedrooms, a full room.
Adequate parking?
Yes. So I was speaking with David. I think we need two spots. So my plan is to have one be able to park in the garage and then one park directly behind. So they have their two spots there, just the same. And then I would have my say, my side first call, two spots there as well. So for that red top, the back of that red car, you can see.
Okay.
Two spots there. So just that line, and then allow them to stack theirs. I assume most people, my real appeal is, you know, there's all the bike riding.
That's what I was like. What are they be parking that stuff?
Yeah.
I have trailers.
I assume. Will a lot of those people have those bike racks on the back or on the top or something? So, when possible, I assume they just park out front if they can't. But I would offer the spot in the garage and directly behind that.
There's been two families living there for quite a while. Sue's daughter in law lived in the basement.
They didn't tell me that someone did rent it. Yeah,
for quite a few years.
There's been a
rental
down there.
Sue Staples. She was. Want me to go back to the history?
No, okay.
Remember, George, you don't love George Staples. He was a minister, school administrator here. His daughter.
I assume we're good with the how many you can have in a certain area. I'm assuming.
We're in good shape there.
Okay.
Are there any restrictions on how many people can stay in the basement?
I'll have restrictions.
I mean, if you're living upstairs, you don't
want to. So, like, we're living upstairs. I have newborns, so we're obviously in the. We don't want any noise any problems anymore.
So have you moved in upstairs yet?
Yes.
Okay.
I moved floors, new paint. I redid the bathroom. I actually gutted my kitchen. But. So, just basically the basic floors, paint, stuff like that.
Good.
But, so upstairs,
and
then I'm just painting downstairs, and
hoping
to get it up, or when the Viking picks back up. It's a good neighborhood. We love the location. That's what really drew us to that home.
It's a great area.
May and I live in that neighborhood.
Oh, you do. 2 houses down.
You've got Matt Creamer next door.
Yeah.
Curtis Mason, a couple houses down.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got all my neighbors. Yeah, we have our new boys that we've been a little scared to go out.
Okay. Entertain a motion. No more questions.
May, you should make it if you live in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I guess it's a motion. Let's see. Motion for Kelvin Anderson to request a conditional. Oh wait, did I just say I approve the motion? Or no, I make a motion. All right, I'm gonna make a motion
to approve him
a conditional use for short-term rental at 677 West 300 North in an R110 zone, number 14 of 45. Assuming I've added parking and everything, so that we just have.
Second?
I'll second that.
Ray second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the newborn.
All right. Kelly's not here. What's the story there?
Okay.
Okay. We'll gladly table it.
But you did notice I did drop off drawings and
that's what this is.
But it's still not.
I had a discussion with him at the post office where they said this is still not what I think the planning commission intended.
Okay, our next item of business is.
Oh, we have the motion on the table.
Okay. Make a motion.
I will make a motion that we table. Kelly Mag will be discussing a proposed garage facility at approximately 100 South and 100 West to a future meeting.
Second.
Second.
Okay. Ray seconded it. Foxy made a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Nope. Okay. All right. Next item of business is approve the minutes of the January 8th meeting.
I want to call David, you do really well with the minutes, considering how dysfunctional we are at times.
Yeah. Well, I think I can bring most of the dysfunction.
Anyway,
I'll make sure.
I'm totally prepared this month, but I didn't hear that.
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes of January the 8th, 2026.
Okay, motion by Ray, second by Roxy.
Except it's the 7th.
Oh, it was the 7th.
Right?
Yeah, we can fix that.
I know, it doesn't really matter, but.
All right. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Okay. Now, discussion. This is to the.
This is a big.
Okay. R11.
McLean and Kendall and I sat down, or the McLean and I were sitting actually, Kendall made him standing, but we spent a good about an hour and a half the other day going through some of this and probably didn't get through all of what we wanted to do.
We can go and I spent another hour on it today.
Yeah. Well, I read over it quite a bit, and I think you've done a good job.
Yeah.
We do have some changes that we want to talk about tonight. Our biggest question for the Planning Commission in the R11 zone is what type of housing would the Planning Commission like to push within that zone? Because there's ways that we can put in the code to incentivize certain types of housing. For example, if you want more apartments, you can push for that. If you want more single family homes, you can make lots smaller to push for a single family home type community. There's a lot of ways that we can help the Planning Commission push for incentivizing certain types of development by maybe making lots smaller, making setbacks smaller for that type of house, things like that. So that's the biggest question we want to bring up to the Planning Commission tonight. And then we can present to you some of the stuff that we talked about changing and give you thoughts on.
That's a good question.
My own opinion, I would prefer more single family homes than apartments.
Right.
I'd even be more okay with townhomes versus, I live kitty corner to the apartment by Black Bear.
Okay.
Nobody lives in them. Nobody lives in them. Nobody's buying them. I don't see anybody there hardly. So I don't see the draw for something like that. I know they're a little, in my opinion, a little pricey for an apartment. But to me, you move here to not live in an apartment.
I think the big thing for me is encouraging community, balancing long-term needs with I know housing affordability is a really big deal right now, but long-term in 50 years, what do we want to see? So that's what's going to be built, right?
Yeah.
So I prefer single family homes or even townhomes as well. But that being said,
kind of a mix between single family and townhomes.
I'm hesitant with apartments just because I don't see them. I guess renting versus buying is different if they're overoccupied, just depending. But
I think too, if it is apartment, if we have apartment development coming, we want to make sure it's community oriented, it's
very, there's space for
the
families to live.
So something that I've been thinking a lot about, and Kendall and I have brainstormed with Dave, with Michelle, is putting in the code of age and open space requirement. A lot of cities that I've worked with in the past, especially down in the lot, they push the open space a lot. And putting a requirement in there after a certain amount of units in the development, there triggers an open space requirement. Also, within that open space, a certain percentage of that being usable.
Not just leftovers.
Not just grass.
Yeah.
Right. But after a certain amount of units, you put in a playground or you put in a community center or a pool or whatever you want to consider usable, you, after a certain amount of units, that triggers an amenity to be included. Right. The hard part is getting the math to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now, the RM11 as it sits, the number of units doesn't really affect a lot in a lot of cases.
What do you mean by that?
So, 90% of the time, you're never going to get 11 units per acre.
Okay. I've always wondered that myself.
So, there's a possibility, and Kendall can speak to this a little bit too, but there's a possibility that we can just get rid of the 11 at the end.
Make it a 10 or an 8 or a 9 or something like that?
Just leave it RM.
So,
RM and leave it at that.
And then let each decision be based upon the merit of the project?
No, it would be based on the type of housing, or the type of housing, so single family, your lot size has to be a certain lot size. If it's a duplex, certain lot size, and so on.
Okay.
And we have a rough draft of what we talked about with Dave and Michelle that we can present and kind of throw ideas at you, and then you guys, you by no means is this like us saying, hey, this is what you guys need to do. This is just our understanding from the Planning Commission was you want to see more single-family housing and maybe townhome type housing that have amenities and more open space, so it's not just buildings with maybe 18 grand planning.
Right.
So that's kind of what we've seen like today. And we have some math to kind of go through.
Yeah, I just have a couple questions so that I can feel informed when we're talking about it. Do we know, like, how much Richfield's going to grow the next 20, 40 years?
What the projection is?
Projections, yeah.
When we did the transportation plan, we estimated about 3% per year.
Did you say 30 or
3?
3.
Per year.
Sir.
10 years, Richfield will grow 30%.
30%?
That's all very contingent on like housing market.
Of course.
Job market, especially because there's no jobs, there's no growth.
Right. We just haven't grown like everybody else.
Yeah.
So I think the housing market grows probably at 3% and the job market probably at 5%.
Yeah.
But that said, I think a lot of the feedback we're getting from developers and from even citizens is the housing market, right?
Mm-hmm.
Figuring out ways to decrease the cost of living. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that decreasing the lot size is going to yield a developer selling a house for cheaper. I'm not saying that. I am saying that decreasing the lot size in RM11 may open up the opportunity, single family home lot may open the opportunity for more single family homes to be built because it incentivizes that type of property to be built. Whereas you could say, and we'll go through the math here, but you could say a 4,000 square foot lot for a single family home is what we want because we want more single family homes. Whereas a duplex, we require 11,500. So you're disincentivizing certain types of housing based on the square footage of the lot. And pushing for the types of housing that the Planning Commission and the city teams didn't.
Yeah. I have more questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, one thing that was brought up is that sometimes it's hard to develop. They feel like Richfield is really hard to develop in.
Yeah.
And this is what, if I'm understanding this right, if we set these up right, it should make it easier for them to develop the kind we want and the kind that they can meet. So it's hopefully improving that for both of us.
Yeah, that would be a lot.
And then when it comes to like, Richfield growth, I know we need to bring, like, there's plans, and I don't know what the plans are, but jobs. This is more just housing to keep up with that. There's no, like, I don't know, just a question there. Because you've talked a lot of citizens, I'm just curious, like, would it make more sense for us to consider incentivizing different house types based on what you're hearing from citizens and people?
And tax and credits is all of this. And the, from what I've seen, the market for the townhomes and the duplexes has been slowed down a little bit. And the single family homes have slowed down as much.
and Tyson might want to speak up on that, but I don't want to speak for real estate agents or the real estate community because they're not in that field, right? I'm an engineer, like.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a temperature for what people are actually hearing. So that's the reason for that question.
Yeah.
I have my opinions, but I want to make sure Richfield is close.
I mean, last night, just in preparation for this meeting, I went through all the real estate postings, and there's multiple duplexes, multiple, like, the condos, multiple types of that type of housing on there that aren't contingent, but almost every house of single family is already under contract. So, I mean, just doing the research that I did last night, the market is showing a need, more of a need for a single family home than a
Like
starter
home size, maybe?
Yeah. Like 1,000 square foot, 1,500 square foot
home. Church, I just finished this downtown, and there's a possibility. I mean, that's a lot of inventory just sitting there. Like,
and nothing sold.
But yeah.
So I think that's the conversation that I wanted to have with you tonight. On the Planning Commission side, from our perspective, we understand that you guys would like to see more of the either town home or more single family than anything. And so we've kind of developed in this zone only so far a kind of a rough draft of what would work, and then we can go into.
Do we have a copy of that?
I'll pull it up here. So, Kendall, can you hear us okay?
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to have to chime in for me, too.
You did a great job.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, Kendall and I spent...
Is that what they're bringing up?
Mm-hmm.
We have that copy, don't we?
I don't think we can bring this today.
Oh.
Okay.
We'll make it even bigger. Okay, so actually, before we get into the math, Kendall, do you want to share your screen?
Yeah, I was just going to say, we said, the draft, right?
Yeah.
And walk through all these options.
So maybe you could go over that draft and go over the different options we came up with.
Yeah, and I apologize if you guys were looking at this draft because we continue to refine it since we put out all the links. So if this draft looks a little bit different from the last time we talked in, know that it's because we keep running math and we keep rethinking theories and keep having new discussions to try and figure out where maybe the benchmark would be for it. So one of the things that we got into discussion about today was a thought for trying to maybe incentivize single families in terms of minimum lot size. So currently the city already knows that it's got a relevant space zoning district which requires 6,000 square foot minimum lot size. I think traditionally, as it was previously written, the RMZ zoning district allowed a single family dwelling unit to occur, but I think the minimum lot size associated with that has been called 15,000 square feet. So, in terms of working that back, you can then see that goes into 0.44 units per acre. This is where we set some of the math maybe before, might not have actually penciled out the intent of the RM11 zoning district, which was originally intended to have a maximum density of 11 units per acre. So, this has been kind of the concept of even planning this. So, originally, when we started talking about this with Dave, we were kicking around the idea of making a map the RM state zoning district require or 6,000 square foot minimum lot size for the single family unit. And then just recently, you know, we thought maybe if
the intent is to sort of incentivize that housing, right? You know, maybe it's even policy expenses to, you know, what about 4,500 square feet? This would effectively be a density of about 9.6 units per acre. So that's what the thoughts we have. Maybe single family doesn't need to be 8,000 square feet in a particular zoning district. Maybe the city would be willing to reduce that to 4,500 square feet. The plan is to walk you through the math just a little bit, but we did kind of doodle on that in terms of what that would look like, you know, using a standard, you know, kind of 100-foot set. So that would work out to 100-foot-deep lot, roughly 45-foot width. We're pretty confident that, you know, that might be workable. One of the things, though, that we noticed in that particular scenario is maybe you did not and probably not a 30-foot front setback, and it might be more appropriate to go with 25-foot front setbacks, just to remember, you know, with the whole footprint or building envelope, you know, to be able to locate the footprint of the potential building. So that's one of the places that we kind of continue to be able to go out kind of out of the office draft. We also got into some additional discussions about minimum lot size requirement for duplex based upon, you know, what's kind of been previously allowed, some of the different developments that have come across. And so, looking at that one, we're pretty confident that everybody seems to be very comfortable with 11,500 square foot minimum lot size. For duplex, again, that's kind of based upon, you know, what's traditionally been allowed to develop. But it comes to your 3 and 4 flexes, so your 3 and 4 family units. We didn't really mess with this one too much. We kind of got the current standard as written in the R11 zone district. So the formula for that is 8,000 square feet for the first unit plus 3,500 square feet for each additional unit. That way you still have enough kind of space, you know, for yard space and other things for those particular types of development. And then we really spent a whole lot of time kind of looking at the math and running through the scenario, which is a map that the plan is going to share on the screen for you here. And the second is the definition of multi-family dwelling unit, which in your code is 5 units or more. And also kind of specifically looking at that with kind of the example and all that height. So the math that we came up with, or the formula, 4,000 square foot for the first 2 units, was 2,150 square feet for each additional unit. And the math that we're going to bring up on the screen, in order to get that math, you did assume a couple of variables. The first of those variables being the desired amount of open space you guys previously discussed. So I think it was talked about in the last time we got together, and then also before that too, the desire to do a 25% open space requirement with a minimum of like 300 square foot usable open space, and then defining usable open space to be, you know, something that you guys actually get usable out of it, you know, playground or some sort of other amenity kind of along those lines. The other assumption that we kind of put into account is roughly 20% for the requirement of infrastructure in some of those developments. So the playoff upstairs, which you can kind of walk through now just a little bit.
Can you pull that back up? Just so you can go through that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, while you're holding it, I can ask you a question. Yeah. I looked at his website today, somewhere in here, I met him. That we're going to require that every building is facing.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah, we're trying to get away from those. Well, that's a discussion point as well, Dave. From what we're hearing, the Planning Commission would like to get away from the side of the building facing the street.
Yes.
So I have a couple of thoughts on that. So one, requiring at least one unit to face the street. So for example, if you want to put 4 units on a lot, you have one front unit with it looking like a house, and then the, if you like an L shape, so the that three units could still go into the back of that house. But I mean, that's up to the developer to figure out how to make that work, right? I think the intent is to get away from those side facing if it's side facing versus front facing, how does that affect acres, square foot? Does that matter at all? Just the way to turn it.
Yeah, just the way to turn it. Yeah. So the intent change from what we've heard from Dave and from Michelle is getting away from those side facing type duplexes or fourplexes, whatever it is, and get more towards the front of the home facing the front of the street. So just to clarify, twin home versus single family. So a twin home is what DOT development put up there on the thing you saw. Well, they're like a duplex, but they have a separate wall, whereas a duplex has a shared wall. And they sold a separate unit. Right. So that's the difference between a twin home and a duplex. Is the twin homes can have they're more like a townhome type style. They can have a lot of 4,000 square feet with 8,000 square feet total. So the two lots put together are 8,000 square feet. I think from what we've heard in the community as well as the funds that that type of product right there, has seemed to work pretty well. So we left that 4,000 square feet for the twin homes, then the duplexes, threeplexes, and fourplexes. We're still keeping the requirement of 8,000 square feet plus 3,500
Did you say 35 or 25?
35.
But this says 25.
We updated.
Okay.
Okay. And then let me get into the math on what we talked about with anything above 40 units. Do you mind if I share, Kendall?
Yeah.
And I'm going to explain this the best that I can. We'll see how it goes. Okay. Can everybody see that okay? So what I did with Kendall this afternoon is I took a 1 acre development and just ran through a scenario of how it would look. So say somebody has 1 acre of property, that's 43,560 square feet. If I take 25% of that, I have 10,890, that's going to be for the last year, open space and landscaping. 300 of that would be usable. The requirement would be usable for like the playground or whatever they want to put in. We said 20% of the acres taken by roads or other infrastructure. And then the first two units, we're saying 4,000 for the first two, and then for what was it, 2150?
Yes, 2150 for each additional unit.
So 4,000 for the first two, so 2,000 per unit, plus 2150 for each additional. So that gets you basically exactly 11 units at almost your full acre. So that scenario works. 11 units per acre, that's maxing out. I mean, that's if you have the perfect lot dimensions, perfect everything, that works out. We took it and looked at a half acre. The half acre is 21,780. Open space requirement would be the 5,445. Roads would be 4,300. The first two would be 4,000. And then each additional would be 6,450. So this half acre lot would be able to actually get just by based on that.
Right.
So then we went and looked at, hey, if we, based on the current code, the maximum development size that is allowed in the zone is 6 acres. So we checked to see what's the maximum amount of units that you could get with the maximum development size. And we came up with 66. So basically exactly 11 units per acre, which is, I mean, the math matches on both. Now we can reduce the open space if you wanted to. We could, this is just showing that the math works for anything above 5, putting the open space requirement in there, making sure it's not just houses on a lot with no backyards. Anything above 5 units, this the math checks out. Any questions on that?
No, I think that's what's why it is 9. Basically, I think somebody's done the math, and that's why we've had it.
Yeah, and this math checks out the math that you currently have in your code. So that's why we're looking at this. This would take care of the townhome situation as well. The townhome development, we put in there the minimum lot width. And maybe, Kendall, do you want to go over that lot width for each one of these?
Yeah, so I know that was a kind of talking point that we got stuck on where we were trying to toss out maybe what the right variable might be. In running some of these particular scenarios, the minimum lot width of the town should somewhere be in the neighborhood of about 24 feet in order for our unit as well to the way it to be. Obviously, they would be allowed to more than 24 feet if they wanted to, but kind of minimum lot width, I believe, is within that 24 foot area in order to make it feasible. Obviously, if there's other than the development committee, those that feel, you know, strongly otherwise, you know, I think that would be some good feedback to hear from them, basically from running all the different scenarios up, like, back to in order to kind of make it make sense. And then other minimum lot width that kind of, as I discussed, got into discussion, you know, earlier to changing, like, that if there's a desire on single family dwelling units to reduce that minimum lot size down to 4,500 square feet, you know, we would recommend a minimum lot width that 45 feet instead of the 70 that was previously outlined in order to make that scenario work. For twin home, I mean, we figured that 35 foot, which is what we had in the original draft, still works. Anyway, that's what we kind of came up with there. And then also too, but in terms of setbacks, like I said, I think if there is a desire there to reduce the reduce to the 4,500 for the single family, I think we need to maybe adjust the front yard setback of 25 feet. I think it technically works with 30 feet, but I think I just left the plan that came up with.
On the single family homes, you'd still have the 8 foot setback on both sides.
Okay.
So you have 16 feet between all and 25 foot offset from the street, and then you still have that 15 foot offset on the back side.
So 25 instead of 30.
Yeah.
I still have problems with that. Mainly because of big trucks. That's about the size of the big trucks.
Yeah. And 25, that'd be 25 from the nearest point on the house. So
right.
If it's the garage, that's what it would
the
be.
The garage is set back in your...
Then it's...
Yeah, you got that extra feet.
Yeah,
I know I know you go everywhere else, St. George. I mean, I just, they're not. They're about 25 or 20 feet back. I mean, it's just, it's pretty dangerous, really. I mean, the kid's coming up the street and your outfit's right on the sidewalk there. I know we discussed this before.
And it works. It still works with the 30.
Yeah.
It just helps make that building be able to be a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So they can still get the square footage.
Right.
Like a 1,500 square foot house could probably fit on that.
Yeah.
Is this where you've got this set up? Is more favorable to the family, or more favorable family?
That's one thing I was going to point out. Kendall, if you can scroll to the top.
Yeah.
Really, the two things that you're incentivizing in this scenario is single family homes and townhomes and twin homes.
Right.
You're disincentivizing the fourplex, the threeplex, and the duplex. And the townhome, so that's a tough one, because basically what we have to post here is what all the development agreements are being approved with. We're just making the code so that we don't have to go through development groups and bring every time we do that.
Right.
It
seems to be critical capital, seems to be what the people are for.
Yeah.
And a lot of the younger generations, if you're in the room, they don't want that. A lot of kids, a lot of people buying them. They like the good home. I personally have a lot of home.
Well, I think the market will, the market tends to turn the mortgage bill, right? So, if there's a market for townhomes, then the market will adjust the building more townhomes. If there's a market, what this is doing is giving you a smaller lot size, hopefully decreasing the cost for the developer to build on this smaller lot, and therefore incentivizing them to build a single family home instead of maybe a duplex.
I wish I knew why our real estate prices are so high here. I mean, a quarter acre here is $80,000. Quarter acre in Mesquite is $40,000. I guess. Well, they got a market down there.
In fact, I did some research. Utah's number six in the nation.
Yeah.
Connecticut, the island, Hawaii, California, Oregon. Those are the top five. We're number six.
Yeah.
In the middle of the desert. Have no ports. I guess we've just done such an awesome job being awesome guys.
Yeah.
On your single family, does that require
Hey, Kendall, can you hear us?
Yeah, the 4,500 would be inclusive of the, the biblical front yard in your yard.
Yeah, but if we go above 5 on the single family, I guess we got to distinguish that. If they go single family and go 4,500, are they required at 5 units to provide amenities at that point?
No, we didn't go down that path.
So, I guess that's a good question, though. So it's 4,500 on a single family lot.
And that four lot is their lot.
Yeah. Basically, it's a tenth of an acre lot is what you're looking at. If you were to approve this. Now, you could stick with 6,000, which is like, what, an eighth of a lot. Really, that doesn't make that big of a difference.
I wish we had a full quorum here so we could get everybody involved. Can't we wait?
Well, this is just a discussion.
I know, this is just a discussion. Yeah. I know.
Yeah, we knew that everybody was going to need some time to still digest this. So, yeah, we did just sit in about this for a discussion and continuation of where we're at. Like I said, we even continued to sort of refine it as we pondered the different elements of that. Yeah. The last thing that I'll add to is, again, this time to give more readily available options. The option for developers to seek a development agreement to do something different than what's established here is also always going to remain conservative typically has.
I appreciate what you guys have done. I mean, you've done a lot of work here.
But the one thing I want to say is we are trying to make it so every development does not need a development agreement.
Right.
And that's the help of the council as well.
Yeah.
They don't want to see a development agreement on every town development.
Right.
They want it to be consistent so that each developer that comes in is not getting preferential treatment. Mm-hmm.
They know what they've got.
Yeah, they know everybody.
It's easier for the developer. You know what's going
to the developer knows what he's got to do before he gets going.
Well, that goes back to the horse trading thing. You can see developers say, well, she didn't do it. But they don't know what was traded in exchange. They just assume they just drive by and they just think of it as well. You didn't have to do this thing. but they don't know what they traded in exchange. They might not know.
Yeah.
What's your reservation? Do you have reservations, buddy?
Me?
Yeah. I'm
trying to wrap my head around. I like what they've done. I've always had a little reservation on setbacks. I just, we tried to shorten them, but I kind of balked on that. So that's just my reservation. I'd like the 30-foot setback. I always have.
That's the thing. There are other zones that are not
quite
density. We think it goes back to
20. Yeah, we did. Yeah. And I just
said. That's the thing. You have big Dodge Julius.
Well, you go around town and you look where people's parked out over the sidewalk, and it's just, it's a safety concern. Yes.
Can I ask the commission, what are your initial thoughts? And this is not like you finding yourself to whatever you see tonight, right? But what are your initial thoughts on the single family home lot size of 4,500 versus 6,000 versus the 8,000 lot this term?
I'm not a small home.
Yeah, initially, I don't have any.
No.
I don't
know if it's not or not. It is kind of what we asked
for.
Mm-hmm.
Those ones. And I also think that incentivize is different. Like, you won't get all small starter homes, but you'll get more of a range, and that makes it more likely to get a range of which you need.
And it's something a lot of communities are going toward. But one issue goes some places they reduce the lot size down to 3,000 feet. Developers, instead of building a small home, have just built backwards and created many mansions just are straight up and down, and so they can still sell for the higher price. So there's always that danger as well.
Well, you look at your other communities, you look at that Santaquin area, and that's just ugly.
I personally think that the market will determine that, right? So if the market has a need for $600,000 houses, then they will build those. Right. If there's a need for $320,000 houses, they'll build that.
Right.
And the smaller lot size will help, hopefully help offset that cost.
So, how does that, I mean, this is just outside of my domain, so I'm just curious. How does that work with, like, long-range planning? Because, just because the market says right now this is what we need, doesn't mean that that's what we want.
Yeah.
So how does that, like, how do you think about that?
Yeah, so that goes back to the general plan too, right? Yeah. I mean, the general plan dictates your zoning changes.
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably why we have a planning commission, to think through that.
The general plan hope is to keep the rural village rich, okay? That's like the goal, is to do that. And I think the planning commission's thought in single family housing is keeping single family homes more often than having a bunch of capital developments.
Right.
I'm trying to remember in that plan. Like, we have all these mountain bike trails, and we have all these awesome things around us. And so, part of that zoning is for, like, hotels and tourism, supporting that. This is all for this RM, and that zoning is different. I'm just trying to remember what these kind of I need to look at it closer. So I just need to digest this.
Tonight's just discussion. I think maybe Dave, if you want to send a link out for these guys, would it be updated about this, so they can look at it?
So I think we have that link to that, don't we? Didn't you send that out already?
Yeah.
I did send the link out. Okay.
Yeah. Because I read it this afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think you're close.
So back to the question about the general plan, I'll just kind of insert this real quick. So if you actually go into the general plan, where it starts to talk about the medium density residential districts, it talks about single family lots, typically range from 6,000 to 8,000, so specifically, it doesn't vary due to that. It talks about limited duplex and townhome opportunities on corner lots near transition areas. This one neighborhood design street oriented homes and front porches, connected street patterns, integrated sidewalks, street created accessory zone units. So, you know, this is always good to keep in mind and consider because, you know, general plans, you want to make sure that you're also too thinking about that and that's a long proof, you know, planning standpoint. You know, you're going to find the need from time to time to go through and update those things, you know, every couple of years, you know, just in order to keep consistent with that. So yeah, there are some pointers that you can take, you know, within the plan itself. And so, there's a lot of the discussion and sort of some of the things that we've been, you know, mulling on, just trying to figure out what exactly the right balance is. To do that, because you also have a high density residential, you know, that talks about, you know, and this is probably a little bit more in line with the R24, but, you know, they also talk about multi-family buildings ranging from 8 to 24 units per acre. And so, you know, you've got kind of these two categories to kind of consider. So if you were, you know, wondering where things start in that plan, I would start looking at that high density residential zoning district and that medium density one.
Thank you, that's very
helpful.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And if you want, like, once we get done with the RM11 amendment, we also can look at those other zoning districts. and potentially look at the lot sizing on that and do the same thing we did here and make sure the math actually adds up to what it is.
Good. Great. Good job. So
if you're okay with what's here, Kendall will do a little more cleanup because we have a lot of thoughts and dispute out. And then we will come back to the next meeting. And I don't know, do we want to do another work session on this or?
You got 3 other people. Well, we got more voices, more concerns.
Yeah.
But I really think you're pretty much on top of it, really. I think if we do our homework and read the documents before, I'll speed it up too. Yeah.
But when we have that link, it's a living document, so that's going to be adjustments. And then if you start getting developments that you don't feel like the vision's being met, then we start making changes again. And when it comes to being like contractors building up, you can always put a limit on R11 developments.
We already got the 45 feet, don't we?
Yeah. So, like, if there's what we do now doesn't mean we can't make changes.
Right. But I think that 45 feet is pretty solid right there. I think, isn't it 45?
Depends on where you're at. I think it's
in
the airport.
Yeah,
when you're in the airport.
I think it's in this, wasn't one of those pages. 42. Huh? 42? Okay.
35 in the other zone, and all the other zones are 42.
Okay, 42. Okay. Thanks, Kendall.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.
All right. I'll entertain a motion. Have anything else, Dave?
No.
There's a second page.
Yes. Okay. So, this is something that's been brought to my attention. Currently, in our zoning, flag lots were required people to put in fire suppression systems, pressurized fire suppression systems. Even if they're just building a single family home. On a flag lot.
On a what?
On a flag lot.
Yeah, what is that?
Okay, what's a flag lot? I don't know what that is.
Basically a backyard lot. Yeah, so say you have your building lot like this, and then somebody decides, okay, I'm going to subdivide this part off. I'm going to have a home here, and then I'm going to build another home back here. Currently, we require pressurized fire suppression for that back, which adds about $30,000.
Why do we do that?
It's a fire.
Because the fire department couldn't get back there.
Yeah, because the fire department is readily.
Okay.
I'm having the fire chief look at this. He's pulling some code, international fire code things, kind of give a recommendation, but this is something we kind of looked at. Maybe we don't need that.
If there's a building, going on Center Street and Brook West, where they're renovating the old Ron Nielsen house and they put a townhome right square behind it.
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
So it's a multi-family dwelling that they're building behind. Well, they're turning the single family into multi-family also, aren't they? They want to make it into townhomes. So you're going to have up to 4 families in those 2 buildings.
Center Street and 4th West?
You know where Ron Nielsen's
that where Lyle used to live.
Right across.
Northeast. Northeast.
Okay.
Dave and I have backwards.
You know, I lived in Sioux City 2 years and I ruined up my whole season direction.
My bad. I apologize.
No, you're good. But no, I don't want to talk about it. And actually, for some reason, that one got through without getting that recommendation. But I talked to the building department about it. They're like, why do you guys do that? It's crazy. Nobody does that.
Well, they do. It's commercial. Because I used to have to do that. I mean, like the warehouse of Pearson's for their tires, that has a big fire suppression, which they should have.
Now, for commercial, it's a different story. And, you know, apartments, hotels.
You want to win.
But a single family homes, maybe, a two-family home, maybe that needs overkill. So, anyway, just something for you guys to pull over. Yeah.
But they're going to tell us what the fire chief is going to tell us.
Yeah, let the fire chief go with that.
Okay. I'll bring you the phones up next week.
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Let's go home.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second, somebody.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you for your report.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get
the math didn't make sense. Thank you. I don't know how to get a 44,000.